chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome into the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, special edition to the show. Today, we welcome in the national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports, Brandon Huffman, fresh off the trail. He went to San Antonio, and then he got to go to just the worst place in the world, Honolulu, Hawaii. Let's all just feel really bad for him as he treks through the treacherous waters of Honolulu. Brandon, thanks for coming on the show, man. You saw a lot of high school football, a lot of 7-on-7, a lot of trench football the last couple weeks. What was kind of your take from an Oregon perspective at the All-American Bowl in San Antonio, most recently the Poly Bowl in Hawaii? Just kind of what was overarching themes that you thought from all those Oregon prospects? Because there was a bunch between the two tournaments, between the two games.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, weather sucks in Oregon, and it doesn't in Hawaii because – the weather caused delays for the early enrollees at Oregon. They didn't get into Waikiki or into Honolulu until like late Wednesday night. They're supposed to be there on Sunday. So as a result of that, you ended up having four guys that didn't end up coming. Kingston Lopa, Aiden Breland, Dylan Gresham, and one other player whose name it's escaping me. Braden Platt, Zadavian Sims did come. Dylan Williams and Tyler Kinsman were both there the whole week because they didn't early enroll. But thankfully, you know, Dakota Fields is the other one who wasn't able to make it. But you had the All-American Bowl before that where you had, you know, Platt and Sims were there the entire week. You had Gatlin Bear, who's still a target. You know, there was a prominent presence with Oregon in San Antonio. Then there was a prominent presence even without the guy showing up in Honolulu. They still, even with only four guys coming, they still had, I think, the second most of all the Power Five schools, or third most after BYU and Tennessee. But they went from having potentially nine guys there to four guys there. Still, you know, Dylan Williams had himself a great week. And I think he at times gets forgotten by a lot of people which is ironic. You know, Long Beach Poly, you would not think guys there, but he didn't maybe have the national profile like a guy like a Braden Platt did. Wasn't the number one player in the state like Platt or Sims. But Dylan had a great week in Hawaii, and it was kind of reminiscent of Javon Holland.
Really?
When, you know, Javon Holland came to Honolulu in 2018, he didn't get invited to any of the, you know, the big two all-star games, and then had a phenomenal week in Hawaii and, you know, kind of showed that we're a guy. He's a guy. And I think that that's going to translate for him to the next level.
You touched on Dylan. I was going to ask you to just kind of give us your assessment there because he did have that big week in the Poly Bowl. Another guy that maybe had a really good week, or I probably should say just 2 weeks, is Xavian Sims. Mm-hmm. What was your impressions there? Another guy on the defensive side of the football for Dan Lanning, shocking. Another defensive lineman for Dan Lanning, shocking. But this is a guy that, from the ratings standpoint, he saw a really big jump from a ratings perspective. So obviously he performed well. What did you see during those two scenarios, those 2 weeks of football that, you know, that stood out to you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're in Oklahoma, it's a lot like being in, say, Oregon or Washington compared right. to the California. Like, you're going to always get overshadowed by the talent in Texas. So the number one player in Oklahoma, it's like Braden Platt. The number one player in Washington, well, you're not going to be looked at like the number one player in Texas or in California. So you go to an event like that and you just dominate. And I think, you know, he showed the athleticism. They would line him up on the edge. They would line him up inside. You know, I saw him in 7-on-7 last spring playing tight end, playing linebacker. So that athleticism at the size that he is, he measured really well. You know, the verified measurements coming out of San Antonio were huge for him. And, you know, the athleticism to back it up. And, you know, we're in a time now where Elijah Rushing didn't end up getting to go to All-American Bowl, where guys will enroll early and they don't get to perform in the All-Star games. And then you have other guys that, for whatever reason, will tap out of a game. And, you know, Zadavian went to 2 games. I mean, him and Braden Platt were determined to get to Hawaii. And, you know, where other guys maybe aren't making that big of a push to go. It's one thing to go to Hawaii. It's one thing to go to San Antonio. It's another thing to perform there. And I think he really acquitted himself nicely at both events. But I think it was just seeing that the actual size and that positional versatility is what really caught everybody's attention.
I watch him and think, that's Brandon Dorlos. Like, very similar body type, very, you know, can play inside and outside. Really excited to see him when he gets to Eugene and we start seeing him play at the collegiate level. We didn't get you on during the December signing period. So maybe some thoughts on just Oregon's class. It's the best class in school history. It's currently the 5th best class in the country. That could change with Bear's addition down the road if he does decide to go to Oregon. We'll touch on that later. But another 5-star in Elijah Rushing, a lot of defensive linemen yet again for Dan Lanning. What's just maybe your overarching thoughts on the 2024 version of Oregon's football recruiting class?
I mean, obviously, I think it's in a trending in a direction where Oregon fans have to be giddy that, you know, they're recruiting like a blue blood. And, you know, to me, the biggest kind of deficit that the Pac-12 schools have had historically have been recruiting defensive linemen. And that's largely because the West just does not produce the depth of defensive linemen like the South does. So when you don't have a lot of defensive linemen to choose from, you have to recruit nationally, but you're going up against the big boys. Well, when you do have a year like this year, where you've got, you know, an Elijah Rushing, an Aiden Breland, a Jericho Johnson, to clean house on all three of them, to keep them away from, you know, the three schools that are going to the Big Ten with you out of the Pac-12, and to address the typical lack of depth that the West has in defensive linemen, to be able to go get all of those and to prepare yourself for that move to the Big Ten. You know, I remember 2 years ago when Dan Lanning got hired, everybody said, oh, he's going to bring an SEC approach right. to recruiting. And I think that was evident in the front seven recruiting he's done over the last two classes. And it's not only strengthening Oregon, it's weakening USC and UCLA and Washington. And then the other schools that have traditionally feasted on the West Coast kids who had no problem leaving the region. So if he's able to address those needs, you know, that's a great sign for Oregon moving forward. Then you throw in, you know, their willingness to go into the portal, not bring a ton of guys in, but go quality over quantity. You know, you put that combination together. If you look at the four teams that were in the playoffs this year in the semifinals, you know, yeah, Michael Penix was a transfer. Technically, Quinn Ewers was a transfer. But the majority of that Texas team, the majority of that Washington team, that Michigan and Alabama team were homegrown, home-developed guys yep. with the occasional dap of portal guys. That, to me, is the recipe to win. Ohio State adds a Caleb Downs. They add a Will Howard. They add a Julian Sain. But where their strength is coming in 2024 is how many of those players are returning to run it back for another year.
For attention.
Exactly. So that's the key. And I think with Oregon, you know, being able to pick and choose who they want out of the portal, but dominate recruiting regionally and then be featured among the top five nationally, that portends for good things down the line.
I think I've asked you this question before, but it was a while ago. I think it was probably before it was under Mario. But even then, it was a different – recruiting is different than what it was 3 years ago. Is this a sustainable expectation for Oregon football to consistently be in the top 10? Because they don't have the recruiting base, but finding talent and getting talent to come visit is as easy as it's ever been. Flight, you know, there more flights are flying into Eugene. Airfare is getting cheaper. Recruits are more open to the idea of traveling well and, you know, earlier in their recruiting process, connecting with recruits, whether it be FaceTime or other technology, makes it easier to kind of break up that distance is a factor thing. Is it fair to expect like top 10 classes, or is this still going to be the anomaly and the norm is going to be somewhere higher than top 10?
No, it's 100% it's fair to expect it. And I think that, you know, this is my, I'm wrapping up my 21st recruiting class when, you know, signing day, the traditional signing day happened on February 7th. That's the 21st class. When I first started, you know, Oregon was coming off a year where they had played in the Fiesta Bowl 2 years before. They had had, you know, a little bit of success, but it was really kind of that late 2000s, early aughts that Oregon started to kick it up a notch.
Yeah.
But when I first started, USC, the first year I did it, they won the national championship. The next year, they won the national championship. The third year, they played for a national championship. Then they went to a couple more Rose Bowls. So those first 7, 8 years that I'm doing this job, SC is dominant. Every kid would say, oh, you know, USC wants to see me like Reggie Bush. USC sees me as, you know, number 55 to next Ray Malaga. 2023, these kids are 24. These kids have grown up saying, my favorite player was DeAnthony Thomas.
Yeah,
Marcus Mariota. Every kid in Hawaii will say Marcus Mariota is their guy. Not Tua, it was Marcus Mariota. It, you know, every kid in Southern California, it was DeAnthony Thomas. You talk to defensive linemen, it's DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead. So the kids that are coming through high school, they only remember, none of them remember the 2016 disastrous season. That was a blip on the radar. They remember them playing for a national championship in 2014. They remember, you know, even older guys and their coaches and trainers, they remember them, you know, playing for a national championship in 2010. I did a Zoom the other night with Ifo Ekpre-Olun. You know, yeah. This is a guy that he's coaching a prominent 7-on-7 team, and this is a guy that people watch play at Oregon. So it's fair to expect it because Oregon kids today only know Oregon as being a national program, a perennial Pac-12 champion. They don't remember the USC teams of the early 2000s. I mean, this year's seniors were born in 2005, 2006. You know, so you look at where Oregon has been able to sustain the success and recruit nationally. They are a brand. And I it's funny because, you know, I remember Georgia when Mark Richt was there, and they had some great seasons, but they had seasons where they went 7-5. Well, now kids only know the Kirby Smart era in Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, they don't realize that for a while Auburn was, you know, Auburn won 6 games in a row against Alabama. They don't remember those things. They only remember what they remember recently. And Oregon falls into that conversation. And I see this a lot with Southern California kids because with USC – they've only seen, yeah, there was that one, speaking of 2016, the year they won the Rose Bowl. But it's been a lot of underachievement and a lot of, you know, lack of living up to what their expectations were. They don't remember the 2000s under Pete Carroll. They don't know Pete Carroll even coached at USC. Their trainers, their coaches might have.
Right.
You know, you have, that's what you have to keep in mind when you're talking about these recruits today is that they only know recent. And Oregon happens to be, you know, in the – at the big boy table in that respect. So it's reasonable to not only expect it, but Dan Lanning will not have it any other way. This guy coached under Nick Saban and he coached under Kirby Smart, two of the best recruiters that college football has ever seen. He is not going to go the Chip Kelly route and recruiting something that I guess you have to do. He's going to go the Saban and Smart route of roster building and roster management. So yeah, not only is it fair to expect that, but I think it's safe to assume that's how it's going to be as long as Dan Lanning is in Eugene.
Back to the class in hand. There's a lot of there's 14 guys that are in the top 247. I mean, that's just an absurd number from an Oregon perspective. And I know they've recruited well lately, but it's something for me that I've covered this team for 14 years. I won't get used to that, saying that 14 guys in the top 247. Let's go to someone below that. Is there, or maybe someone included in it, that could count too. But is there a guy that you just like that maybe is being overlooked by either the fan base or, you know, what have you?
Yeah, you know, I would say, and part of it's self-inflicted, you know, because injuries have kind of delayed him the last few years. But I mean, I was a big AJ Pugliano fan at the beginning of his high school career. I mean, he was an initial top 100 member, and then injuries just never, you know, he couldn't get over him. If he could get healthy, he is a well-rounded, all-around inline tight end, but a guy who can catch the ball and can run routes. So, and again, he committed so long ago that you essentially become out of sight, out of mind, you know, and that's the thing. We joke about this every year, but like when you get five stars, let's say, but those guys commit in January of their junior year, you bemoan the two guys you lost down the stretch instead of celebrating the fact you got five stars, but they've already been on campus for a couple of weeks. So it's easy to forget about it. And I think when guys commit earlier and earlier, you only remember the guys that you lost out on or gained at the end. You forget kind of the early commits. And I think AJ is a guy that, when healthy, can be really good. Another guy that I like a lot, you know, he maybe never got quite over that 90 threshold, but Devin Brooks.
I was going to bring him up.
Yeah, I'm a big Devin Brooks guy. You know, I think what hurt him the most is that his body is geared to play inside. He was having to play tackle, but he really is an inside guy. And those guys just aren't, you know, I'm saying this to a school that just produced the Remington Award winner, but more often than not, interior linemen aren't treated as fairly or unfairly. They're not treated as glowingly as tackles are. Right. So again, you look at, and because Oregon offensive line recruiting has been so good these last few years, it's easy to overlook an interior lineman who's a three-star and who's an in-state kid, you know, because Oregon's used to recruiting the Floridas, the Georgias, the Texas, the Californias. So an in-state kid, it's funny, it's one of those rare states where, especially when you look at some of the other states out west, where an in-state kid is not like, we have to get him. We absolutely have to get him. And oh my gosh, how could he never look else? Where it almost feels like with Oregon, the in-state kids kind of maybe aren't as appreciated as much. And you know, that's another conversation we could have for another day. But sometimes they're not as sexy as, you know, the out-of-state players. So I think Devin kind of falls into that category.
Yeah, I was happy you mentioned him because at the Fiesta Bowl, when it was media day, I made a point to go to every position coach and ask them about the signees that they got and kind of their positions looking forward to next season. And Alik Terry, Oregon's offensive line coach, raved about Devin Brooks and Fox Crater. Said both guys could – he said Crater could play all five positions when he gets to Oregon. They'll figure out where he fits down the road. But Devin Brooks, he said, is an absolute road grader, and he was super excited about that one. And he was like, yeah, don't worry about the stars like that. This guy's going to be a player in, yeah, he really liked him.
An 89 means we think he's going to be a hell of a college player.
Right.
It just means that the positional value on a center in the NFL and in college isn't as great, you know? So I love when people treat 89s as if they can't play football or a high three. Those guys are still damn good football players. They're just not as sexy, you know? Right. And Alabama signed, you know, three or four stars a year. You know, not every school is going to get 25, and especially in a day and age where guys don't want to have to compete at the position. You know, it's rare if you can get four or five stars across the board. Not, I say that as Oregon just signed, you know, 100 five-star defensive linemen.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
I have to ask, what's the latest with Gaten Bear? Michigan, Oregon, is it just still those two, or could Jim Harbaugh's potential departure mix things up here, or is it just Oregon's to lose there?
I mean, it's absolutely Michigan is still, I would say right now Michigan is the leader, yeah. But I maintain this even when he committed to Boise State back in, you know, August, where Gaten Bear signs and where he enrolls in 2026 does not necessarily mean it's going to be the same place. I thought that with Boise State. I thought if he went to Michigan or Oregon in August, they could still end up at Boise State. You know, so much is changing. So much is fluid in college football. You know, Jim Harbaugh could be gone in 2 weeks. I would be stunned if Jim Harbaugh was there in 2 years.
Yeah.
But if he resigns and decides to stay there for life, then, you know, does that have a bearing on Gaten Bear? But you're still preparing for a guy that won't show up until 2026. That said, Junior Adams has stayed on him. And, you know, it was ironic because he was in Oregon the weekend that Andy Avalos got fired, which, you know, kind of showed that he was already not 100% sure about Boise State. And it wasn't like him visiting who got Avalos fired. It was more, he was already having some doubts. So I think Oregon and Michigan are locked in a battle. I'd still tend to lean slightly Michigan on this one, but because track is not going to be a factor for him in college, that's that ace in the hole that Oregon had with like a Braden Platt. It doesn't necessarily carry the weight with Junior or with Gaten Bear. What it does is Dan Lanning saying he's not leaving, he's staying.
Yeah.
Michigan can't make that same claim until we know what happens with Jim Harbaugh. And there's still 2 weeks before Gaten Bear signs, and there's still 2 years before he enrolls.
Yep. Got to ask you a big picture question. Signing day in the portal. I know from an Oregon perspective and the fan base perspective here, they're just absolutely relishing in seeing Washington crumble. But that sucks. Like, that's not how this should work. You make the national championship game, you're a couple plays away from having a chance to win it all. And then 2 weeks later, your roster is gutted, your commit list is gutted, and there's no one available to go out and replace those guys from the portal because it's pretty much picked over by now. Mm-hmm. There's so many dynamics here. How do we – is there a way to fix this? I think one thing that people don't understand is like, well, push signing day here or push portal back or whatnot. Like, a lot of this is not going to happen from a movement standpoint, in my opinion, because schools want to be able to enroll guys.
And that's the key right there, is that even if you push signing day up, guys enroll. Well, now with this temporary restraining order limiting, you know, preventing the limit on how many times you can transfer, guys don't care. They'll enroll, be on campus for a week or two, and then decide to go into the portal. It doesn't affect them anymore. Now you have free reign to transfer as many times as you want. So I don't think even that has an impact anymore. Moving signing day, we've seen a number of multi-time transfers. Now we're seeing guys like a Julian Sain leave Alabama to go to Ohio State. And if it doesn't work out at Ohio State, he can transfer again and still be able to play immediately. So I think big picture wise, obviously Nick Saban retirement is closer to Roy Williams than Coach K. We knew Coach K was going to retire a year ahead of time. There was already a succession plan in place, but Roy Williams retires after the season. All right. Carolina was, you know, playing for the national championships, winning them, going to Final Four. Sorry if it's too soon, Oregon basketball fans. But the point being that Saban had the ripple effect. Roy Williams still didn't because they went internal. They hired Hubert Davis. Where the Saban effect, I mean, there's five schools that were affected by him leaving. Alabama, Washington, Arizona, and then Buffalo, and actually six, because Buffalo and South Alabama lose their head coach. San Jose State loses their head coach. So six schools all affected by, you know, January.
One man's decision.
By one man's decision. And four of those, or three of those are Power Five schools that finished the top 10 or top 15 this year. And then, you know, a couple of pretty solid group of five schools that went to bowl games. But, you know, I remember 2 years ago when Brian Kelly left right after Thanksgiving and Lincoln Riley left and USC had fired Clay Helton in mid-September. The feeling was if you fire your coach early, you could salvage a recruiting class. Well, you still can't take into account if coaches leave in January and the ripple effect that has. So the entire calendar is screwed up and you're still held hostage by coaches. I mean, the reality is too, with the NFL, with there being some of these head coaches in college that have the chops to coach in the NFL, those jobs aren't going to open up until January anyway. So you're still going to have the Jim Harbaugh type effect, you know, Pete Carroll retiring, do they want to go college again? So, I mean, I just don't think that there is a way to answer that question big picture wise.
Right.
Because people could say NIL has ruined recruiting. I don't believe that's the case. I think it's made it more fun.
Yeah.
People could say the transfer portal has ruined recreating. I don't think that's the case either. I think it's made, I think it's awesome. And I mean, for you and I who cover college football and recruiting for a living, it's fabulous content.
Yes.
That's real. But the thing that I think has really, and I don't think it's a negative at all. If you don't like a school, you don't want to be at the school, then you'll transfer as many times as you want. What doesn't get in it, people say it's the portal. To me, the biggest impact has been the erosion of the one-year sit-out. Yeah. Because when you face the reality of losing a year of playing, you were more likely to stay in place. Now you're immediately eligible. Remember, we had those years where guys would go to the portal and there would be a dead grandma that was 150 miles away that might get you the exception, even though you were still far away from them. Now, you know, Tom Mars is making a living off that. When they got rid of the sit-out rule for everybody, that is what changed everything. So it wasn't the portal. It was the NCAA eradicating that rule. That is what's made roster management so much different and so much more of a pain for college coaches. It's great for us, but it's a pain for a college coach. But you know what, coaches? If you're going to get paid $10 to $12 million and you're going to have these ridiculous budgets, suck it up, buttercup, deal with it.
I was just going to say, is that the trickle-down effect, is that leading to the expansion of staff sizes?
100%.
You're just hiring more guys to be able to handle the recruiting and the roster management so that the 12 coaches on the field plus the GAs can focus strictly there.
On football. I mean, you're seeing schools now more and more adding general managers, and it's a call to arms. You know, we're no longer worried about the best facilities. We're no longer worried about, you know, the best study hall rooms. We need NIL money. And we need somebody to manage the NIL, manage the collective so that, you know, Joe defensive coordinator can just worry about the game plan for Saturday. Not about the 20 recruits that are coming to the game. It's winning the game on Saturday. Let my support staff worry about those recruits coming. I mean, I remember you and I have both been in this business long enough to remember when the running backs coach was the recruiting coordinator. Yeah. You know, he handled all the recruiting. The DFO, director of football ops, handled everything. Now you've got 10 to 12 recruiting staffers at the bigger schools. And now even G5 schools are adding directors of player personnel. FCS schools are adding DPPs. General managers are being added at G5 schools. So you're seeing the support staffs grow because you want this separation of football administration and football coaching. Yep. And the football coaches are the ones that are doing the coaching. Yeah, they're the ones going on the road, but I think you're going to eventually see in the next 2 to 3 years, if not sooner, if you have a coordinator who's a damn good coordinator, but this does not connect with recruits in an in-home visit or out of school, you're going to keep him home and you're going to send your 25-year-old recruiting as personnel guy on the road because he's got, you know, 7 Red Bulls and 8 Celsiuses and a couple Zins, and he's going to hit 20 schools in one day. Yeah, you know, the defense coordinator is going to go hit 2.
We're seeing that already with Oregon right now. Mm-hmm. When they have assistant coaches who leave for another job elsewhere, and sometimes they even just pull off assistant coaches to give them a break. And we've seen Dean.
You're going to be sick, coach. You're not going to travel. You're going to need to have that. Remember that back surgery you were talking about? You might want to go ahead and get that. I don't need it. Okay, yeah, but we're going to still tell the NCAA you're going to get it because we need you here. And we need the young guy on the road. And I always, you know, people always freak out. Well, why is he on the road? Well, it just means another coach came off. But eventually there's going to become a tipping point, if you will, where there's not even going to need to be a dancing around that. It's just going to be a straight up, hey, we're letting our personnel and our staffers go on the road. That's what their job is to recruit. You just stay back and you start developing a spring football game plan.
He is Brandon Huffman. Follow him on 24/7 Sports. Follow him on X. I can't believe I just said that. Twitter.
will always be Twitter.
Yes, it will always be Twitter. Thanks for coming on the show, Brandon. Really appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you soon down the road.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.